though I couldn't have told you who, some nameless, faceless guy who, in the fantasy, made me feel comfortable and known and also pretty. Maybe I imagined eating my mom's pancakes for breakfast before school, which always came in the form of my initials long after I was too old for that sort of thing, because it turns out you are never too old for that sort of thing. And her veggie lasagna for dinner. I loved her veggie lasagna. Nothing crazy. Who knows? Maybe it would have been pizza day at school. Our school had surprisingly good pizza. A perfect day didn't have to include a fantasy trip to the Caribbean, or skydiving, or hugging someone's leathered back on a motorcycle. Though all of that and more was, of course, on Scarlett's list. But I've always liked simple things. Now, on the other side of everything, I can't wrap my head around a perfect day. Now, without my mother, what could that even look like? I think back to before, and they all seem like perfect days. Who cares about a stubbed toe or the hint of a booger in my nose? I had a mother, and not just insert generic mother here, but my mother, who I loved in a way that not everyone gets to love their mom. I mean, I know on some level everyone loves their mother because of the whole she is your mother thing. But I didn't love my mom just because she was my mother. I loved my mom because she was cool and interesting and warm and listened to me and continued to make me pancakes in the shape of my initials because somehow, even though I didn't, she always understood that I'd never be too old for that sort of thing. I loved my mom because she read the entire Harry Potter series out loud to me. And when we were finished, she too wanted to start all over again. If there's one thing I've learned in the last 2 years, it's that memory is fickle. When I read Harry, I can no longer hear my mother's voice. But I picture her next to me. And when even that fails, I imagine the weight of someone against me, an arm against my arm, and pretend that's enough. I loved my mom because she was mine, and I was hers, and that belonging to each other thing will never happen for me again. Perfect days are for people with small, realizable dreams. Or maybe for all of us, they just happen in retrospect. They're only now perfect because they contain something irrevocably and irretrievably lost. Chapter 10.
Sorry, we only hire Starbucks experienced baristas, the guy at Starbucks tells me when I inquire about an after-school job.
He looks like he's in his early 20s, and spends most of his milk-steaming money on hair modeling clay.
This is a serious job. We take it very seriously.
Wait, what? I ask, because now he mouths words I can't quite make out.
Sorry, just practicing my lines.
He shows me a script he has hidden under the counter.
Have an audition later. I'm really an actor.
Coffee guy, whose name, if his tag is to be believed, is actually Guy, smiles. But it's an insincere smile, the kind that looks like it's doing you a favor.
I just did a guest bit on that new show, Filthy Meter Maids.
Cool, I say, wondering if the polite thing would be to say he looks familiar. He doesn't look familiar. So how did you become a Starbucks experienced barista if they only hire Starbucks experienced baristas? Chicken egg, right?
Huh?
I just mean, how'd you get the job?
Oh, right. I lied.
You lied?
I said I'd worked at Starbucks before. For years.
And they believed you? I think about going home, editing my resume, adding a line, Starbucks, Oak Park, 2013 to 2014, and coming back tomorrow.
But then I picture my first day as a faux experienced Starbucks employee. No doubt I'd scald myself or get yelled at by frustrated customers. People are nasty before they've had their coffee.
I guess I'm a very good actor.
Coffee guy smiles again, and now it seems he's saying three things all at once. The words he's speaking out loud, the ones he's practicing from under the counter, and the unspoken ones his smile can't help but say, which is, "You're welcome." After Starbucks, I get shot down at the Gap, the Pressed Juicery, a gluten-free vegan bakery, and Namaste Yoga. I am almost ready to give up hope when I notice a tiny bookstore called Book Out Below! Exclamation point, tucked next to a designer kids clothing store. No help wanted sign, but still worth a shot. Immediately, the smell of books greets me, and I feel at home. This is what my house in Chicago used to smell like. Paper. I cross my fingers in my pocket and say a quick prayer as I make my way through the stacks to the desk in the back. Normally, I would take my time, run my hands along the spines, see if there's anything that catches my eye to possibly borrow from the library later. But what I need right now is a job, not more reading material. As it is, even without any semblance of a social life, I'm up late every night trying to keep up with homework and PSAT studying. And though I desperately needed the caffeine today, I couldn't even buy a Diet Coke from the stupid Wood Valley Caf. SN was right. The credit card machines have a $10 minimum. I have $8.76 to my name. I was going to ask my dad for money this morning, but Rachel was there, and I couldn't bear the thought of her reaching into her wallet and handing me a 20.
"Can I help you, dear?"
the saleswoman asks me, and seeing her face makes me realize that since moving here, I haven't seen a single person with wrinkles until now. The women in L.A. all have taut skin, the kind pumped full of injectables that render them ageless, just as believably 40 as 70. This woman, on the other hand, has bobbed gray hair and crisscrossed lines at her lips and wears the sort of linen tunic they sell in expensive hippie stores. She's probably the same age as Rachel, though they could be different species. Where Rachel is hard, she's soft. "Hi, do you happen to be hiring?" I ask, and hear Scar in my head. "Channel your inner goddess. Be confident, strong, undeniable." Scar's favorite word is undeniable, actually, which tells you everything you need to know about her. My favorite word, on the other hand, is waffle, both a delicious breakfast food and a verb. The woman eyes me carefully, takes in my Vans and my ratty scarf and my leather motorcycle jacket and my hair, which is pulled up into a messy loop on top of my head. Maybe I should have gone more professional. Not that I own a suit or anything. I even had to borrow clothes from Scarlett for my mother's funeral. Ruined her favorite blazer by association.
"That depends. Are you a book person?" the woman asks.
I put my bag down on the counter and open it. Take out the 6 books I checked out of the library last week. When we moved, I got my library card. Figured it was the one thing that was guaranteed to be free. This is what I'm reading now. The Wasteland and Crime and Punishment are for school, but the rest are for fun.
"You're reading a nonfiction book about Nazi Germany for fun?" she asks, pointing to The Lost by Daniel Mendelsohn.
I wanted to mix it up. It looked interesting. It's about a guy trying to learn about what happened to his family.
Huh. Book 3 of an apocalyptic YA series, which shows you are willing to follow through. Ooh, and some old-school Gloria Steinem. I like it. Eclectic taste.
I've always been a reader. It's in my DNA, I say, and hold my breath.
Here's the thing, she says, and I can already hear the apologetic start of a rejection. No, I need this to go my way. Please, listen,
I don't need a ton of hours unless you need someone for a lot of hours, and then I can need them. What I mean is, I'm flexible. I'm available any day after school and on weekends. I love books. I love your store, even its punny name, though I'm not sure about the exclamation point. And I just think this would be a good fit. Me, here. I have a resume if you need it. I take out my pathetic resume, which is filled with babysitting references and a short stint at Claire's selling barrettes to snotty 7-year-olds, and, of course, my illustrious 2 years at the Smoothie King. My after-school activities, yearbook, newspaper, photography club, Spanish club, poetry club. My GPA at FDR, and a short section titled Interests and Hobbies, reading, writing, mourning. Okay, that's not on there, but it should be. I'm a champ at that. I had to change the font to 16-point courier, so my resume would take up a whole page. Where do you go to school? Wood Valley? I say it like a question. Damn you, nervous up-talking. I mean, I'm a junior there? I just moved? My son is at Wood Valley, too. He's a senior. Do you know him? Liam Sandler? Sorry, I'm really new. I don't know anyone yet. I like you, she says, and her smile is the opposite of coffee guy's, reassuring, not self-affirming. Let me talk to Liam. He's been complaining that he wants more time off to practice with his band. If he wants to give up his hours, they're all yours. Thanks so much. My number's on there, so just call me. Whenever. I'm hesitant to leave, even though it's obvious I should go. My fate is now tied to some Wood Valley senior who wants more time to bang on his drums. I hope he wants to practice every afternoon and every weekend. I want to move out of Rachel's house and move in here, sleep under the stacks, and make cup of soup from the water cooler in the corner. I want this gray-haired woman to talk books with me and help me with my homework. I want her to tell me I'll do okay on the PSATs, even though I don't have a tutor twice a week like Theo does. I want her to tell me everything is going to be okay. And if not all that, I at least want her to give me a discount. I gather my books and walk toward the door, head down, pull out my phone to text Scar. Me, send positive vibes. Perfect bookstore equals perfect job. Me want it badly. Scarlet. Better than making smoothies with your BFF? Me. Not even close. But if I must be a loner, best to be surrounded by imaginary friends. Scarlet. Miss you, lady. Her words make me feel lighter, and I find myself smiling at my phone. I am not alone. Not really. Just geographically isolated. Don't walk and text. That's my first thought when I find myself on the floor of the bookstore, right on the threshold, holding my throbbing forehead. I see stars. Not the celebrity kind my dad promised when he tried to get me excited about moving to Los Angeles, but the cartoon kind that signal a concussion. I have no idea how I got here, why it hurts to turn my head, or how my knees buckled, or why I feel perilously close to crying for about the millionth time since I moved to this place. Are you okay? A voice asks. I don't look up. Not yet. Because I think if I move my head, I might throw up, and that's the only thing that could make this any worse. Humiliation has not kicked in, and I'd like to stave that off for as long as possible, not compound it. I didn't see you there. Clearly, I say, and suddenly I'm eye to eye with a guy about my age who has squatted down to check out the damage to my face. He has longish dirty blonde hair and dark brown eyes, and a hint of a pimple on his chin. A much better-looking version of Adam Kravitz, the boy next door. Sweet and distracted, and probably smart and kind to his mother, and will grow up to invent something like Tumblr. The kind of guy you'd probably want to kiss, especially if he made you laugh, and whose hand you definitely wouldn't mind holding. I blink, notice his shaggy hair again. I know him from somewhere. What was that? I ask.
That was Earl.
He motions to a large object he is carrying on his back. Earl?
My guitar, he says.
Your guitar is named Earl? I ask, which is probably the least relevant question to the matter at hand. I should have asked for some ice, or a bag of frozen peas, at the very least a Tylenol. I can already feel a lump forming.
Yep. Are you sure you're okay? I whacked you hard.
I'll live. He puts out his hand and helps me stand up, and I find I'm more stable on my feet than I would have guessed.
I'm really sorry. Totally my fault.
He pockets his phone. Maybe he was walking and texting too? And puts his guitar down against one of the stacks. There's a WHVS sticker on his case. Ah, now I place him. Of course. He was witness to my very first, but not last, Wood Valley humiliation. The guy who interned at Google and traveled around India. He looks different in this context.
Just thought of some lyrics and wanted to get them down before I forgot.
Wait, you're Liam, right? I ask.
That depends on whether you're planning to sue me,
he says. Now that I've put two and two together, I can see his mother in his face. The same generous grin. I wonder what kind of music his band plays. I bet it's something folksy, and that they're not half bad. Surely he should practice more. Nope, I smile.
Well then, what can I do for you? I clearly owe you one.
I hear Scar loud and clear in my head. Be undeniable. And so I am. I got a job, I announce when I get back to Rachel's later. I'm so excited that I have to tell someone, even if that someone is my disinterested stepbrother, who would never lower himself to do something as mundane as work. I find him on his bed, playing with his laptop. And before you throw another fit, it's not at Ralph's. It's a place you and your friends will never, ever go. So don't you worry.
I've never seen you so animated. It's kind of adorable,
Theo says.
So where will I never, ever go?
Oh, wait. Let me guess. He puts down his laptop and puts his hands to his head, as if he's thinking very hard.
KFC?
Nope.
The batting cages?
Nope, but I like this game.
The ridiculously delicious pretzel place.
Not even close. Rachel sticks her head in the door, and I feel that squeeze in my stomach that always accompanies an interaction with her. I'm smart enough to know it's not really her fault, that my feelings toward her probably have little to do with the reality of who she is. But still, I can't help it. I don't want to know her. Don't want this random person my father has inexplicably chosen to marry to be an integral part of my life. What happened? I heard happy squeals, she says. She can't help herself. She looks from Theo to me and me to Theo, and her smile is so emphatic that I can see the fillings in the back of her mouth. She is almost thinking out loud, maybe this whole thing will work after all. Nothing, I say, and when her face falls, I feel guilty. I don't mean to cut her down, but I just don't have it in me to give her this, to hand over the one good thing that has happened since I moved here. Sorry, I'll leave you guys to it, she says, as always too loud, and continues down the hall. I wonder if I'll hear about this later from my dad. If she'll tell him that I was rude, and he'll ask me to be nicer. I should be nicer.
All right, I give up. Tell your big brother.
Theo says, not at all seeming to notice how I talked to his mother, or maybe not much caring.
Ew, that sounds so wrong. I know, right?
Okay, so where? Book out below. You know the bookstore?
Ah, how appropriate.
but I actually have been there, if you must know. I am highly literate.
I'm sure you are, I say, which is the truth. Theo recently beat me on a physics quiz, even though I know for a fact he didn't study the night before. The kid is smart. It seems, with the possible exception of Tweedledee and Tweedledummer, everyone at Wood Valley is smart, or at least motivated. Here it's cool to try, which is funny, because trying is why I wasn't particularly cool in Chicago. By the transitive property, you would think I'd be cool here. But no. Then again, I casually reference things like the transitive property, so maybe there are other more valid reasons for my lack of popularity.
So, what the hell happened to your face? Theo asks.
Chapter 11. Ethan.
You? Me? The Wasteland Library. Friday 3:30. Work for you?
Me.
Sure.
Ethan.
Cool beans.
How does he make something like cool beans, perhaps the dorkiest expression ever uttered, sound acceptable? Do I write more to keep the conversation going? I'm better writing than I am talking in person. Maybe this is my shot to show who I actually am, not the weird loser I morph into around people who make me nervous. Will I still have this bulbous bruise on Friday? This is ridiculous. This is so not a big deal. We are working on a project together. He doesn't like you. You certainly do not like him. Get over yourself, Jesse. Grow up.
Scarlet. School sucks balls without you. I had to sit with Dina today and hear all about her gymnastics meet. How's your head?
Me. Swollen. Blue. I took your hat suggestion. Got alternately mocked and complimented.
Scarlet. If I were there, I'd give those two girls a knuckle sandwich.
Me. Not worth hurting your hands.
Scarlet. You okay?
I worry.
Me. Don't. Fine. Making friends with Dree.
Scarlet. Just don't like her better than me.
Me. Never.
Scarlet. And how's Mr. Holmes?
Me. No idea. He's always with the step monster. Rather not deal.
Scarlet. Adam Kravitz wants to take me to homecoming.
Me. What? Took you long enough to tell me. And?
Scarlet. We'll see.
Me. How'd he ask?
Scarlet. Text. But cute text. You know, he's shy.
Me. I bet he's a better kisser now.
Scarlet. I'll let you know. Maybe. You know you only ask me because you're not here.
Me. Not true.
Scarlet. I bet we spend the whole time talking about how much we miss you.
Me. No way. Go forth and prosper.
Scarlet. Nerd.
Me. If I used the expression cool beans, I'd sound like an even bigger nerd than I already am, right?
Scarlet. OMG. Seriously, unless you want to be bullied forever, do not use cool beans.
Me. Yeah, that's what I thought.
SN. Nice hat.
Me. Thanks. Actually, that's kind of creepy. You know what I wore today, but I still have no idea who you are.
SN. Jeans, a t-shirt, sneakers. Same as yesterday and tomorrow. You missed nothing.
Me. Not the point.
SN. What happened to your head? Do I need to beat someone up for you?
Me. You know, that's the second time today someone has offered to defend my honor. Makes a girl feel special. But no. Culprit was a guitar case.
SN. Ouch.
Me. Not my finest moment. I'm not usually that clumsy. Felt like a rom-com heroine, except it wasn't romantic or funny. And I hate that trope.
SN. Sorry for delay. Was looking up the word trope. Don't think less of me.
Me.
Huh. I'm not a word snob. I just like them.
SN. Me too. Who else offered to defend your honor? Do I need to beat him up?
Me. Smiley face. No. My best friend from home, Scarlet.
SN. I like her.
Me. Is it weird for me to say that I think you actually would?
SN. Nope.
Me. How was your day?
SN. Fine. Just some stuff on the home front.
Me.
Want to talk about it? Or write about it, I should say?
SN.
Not really. Just my mom. She's going through a tough time.
Me. Yeah. I know how that is.
SN. Going through a tough time? Or having a mom who is?
Me. Both, actually.
Me.
Well, sort of.
Me.
It's complicated.
SN. Me too. It's all effing complicated.
Me. Hey, what's your favorite word?
SN. What?
Me. Just thought it was something I should know about you.
SN. No, I mean my favorite word is why.
Me. It's a good word. Why?
SN. Right?
Right.
A word and a whole question. And yours?
Me. Waffle.
SN. Huh? A great breakfast food? And of course, dictionary.com reminds me that it also means to speak or write equivocally.
Me. Exactly.
SN. I think one day we should eat waffles together.
Me.
Equivocally, yes.
Next day at lunch, I sit with Dree and her friend Agnes, who is probably her Scarlet. I'm still too new here to see where this table fits into the high school hierarchy. It seems none of my old rules apply. Back in Chicago, the athletes, who gathered Saturday nights in the bowling alley parking lot to sit in open hatchbacks and drink cheap beer by the case and toss their empty cans at the dumpster, were the popular kids. And the theater dorks, who had ill-placed piercings and one silly streak of cotton candy-colored hair, were, well, the dorks. Theo and Agnes wouldn't have even rated. Here, it's the opposite. Theater is an actual graded class and an after-school activity, and both are considered cool. Back home, I was neither athlete nor theater dork. Instead, I was in that middle clique that every school needs to function efficiently, the worker bees. We took the honors classes, ran the newspaper and the yearbook and the student government. Not popular, not even close, but at least indispensable. Back at my old school, it was important to distinguish the worker bees from the straight-up nerds. The nerds were even less cool than the theater dorks, but they were too busy learning how to write code and nurturing.com fantasies to care. The truth is, it doesn't matter to me where Dree and Agnes fit in, because this sure as hell beats sitting on my bench alone outside. Anything is a step up.
I just think that if you're going to post that kind of nasty shit on Instagram, own it, Agnes says.
I have no idea what she and Dree are debating, only that they each seem invested in their side of the argument. Agnes is a tiny girl with a dyed red bob, plastic-framed glasses, similar to Dree's, and a nose that looks like someone pinched it too hard, and it stuck. She's not beautiful. Not necessarily even pretty, but cute. What happens when you take something full-sized and remake it in miniature? Okay, I'll just admit something here. Something I've never told anyone, not even Scar. Whenever I meet someone new, I silently ask that inevitable catty girl question. Is she prettier than me? The truth is, the answer is often yes, which I think makes my even asking the question in the first place a little less offensive. I know I am not ugly. My features all fall within the normal range. Nothing grossly oversized. Nothing too small.
but I definitely look different from the girls here. I imagine, or I hope, that one day I will be discovered, that I will actually be seen, not as a sidekick, or as a study buddy, or as background furniture, but as someone to like, maybe even to love. Still, I've come to accept that high school is not my forum. Bookish is not even on the list of the top 10 things high school boys look for in a girl. I'm pretty sure boobs, on the other hand, rank pretty high. If you must know, a B cup on a good day. Agnes is probably an A, but makes up for it by being adorable. That is, until she starts talking. Like, what do you think, Jesse? Am I right? I wasn't listening. I was looking at all the other kids in the cafeteria, at all these strangers, thinking how intimate it felt to be sitting there together shoveling our food into our mouths, wondering whether this place would ever start to feel familiar. And true, I was also watching Ethan Marks, through the window, sitting alone near the coffee cart, another book in hand, though I can't see the title. If you're going to say something online, be prepared to say it to my face. Yeah, I guess, I say, a good waffle. They've saved me on more than one of these lost-in-thought occasions. I'm pretty sure I don't agree with Agnes, if only because she seems to be the type of girl to make all sorts of silly pronouncements. Mr. Green is such a bitch. He said I plagiarized just because I borrowed a couple of sentences from someone else's blog post. It's called pastiche, dude. Or, only wannabes wear Doc Martens. Or, Jesse, you'd look so pretty with a little makeup. Agnes, sometimes people are shy. She didn't say anything bad. She just said you hurt her feelings. Which you did. Some people find it easier to write than to say it to your face, Dree says. She looks to me to back her up, and I wonder if my existence is a problem for her friendship with Agnes. Scar and I always sat alone at lunch. We weren't really interested in talking to anyone else. To be honest, I'm not sure how I'd feel if she had invited some new girl to sit with us. Dree not only invited me, but did so excitedly. Obviously, I don't know the full story, but I'm definitely like that. I'm so much more comfortable writing than saying things out loud. I wish I could live my whole life on paper. I consider telling them about somebody nobody. I wish I could explain how talking to him is so easy the words flow in a way they never do when I have to talk out loud. I also wouldn't mind some help figuring out who he is. Then again, maybe I don't want to know. SN may be right. The not knowing is what keeps us connected. It would be so much harder writing to someone I knew I'd see the next day. And I wonder if it works the other way, too. Even though he knows who I am, maybe not having to face me makes the conversation flow for him as well. Of course, Agnes is wrong. Words are no less courageous for having been written rather than spoken. And I'm all set to say that to her, out loud and with conviction, when I hear my name being yelled from across the cafeteria. Jesse! At first, I assume the voice is calling someone else, on account of my having no friends at this school. But the voice is so insistent, and even vaguely familiar, that I look up. Shaggy hair and a smile. Hey, Jesse, Liam says, now next to our table, having jogged over with Earl again thrown over his shoulder. He pushes his bangs out of his eyes and then points to his forehead. How's the wound? Almost gone, but if you bring that guitar any closer, I'm going to have to get a restraining order, I say, which even to my own ears almost sounds like flirting. I blush. I don't know how to flirt. I always feel like an imposter. And I don't even want to flirt with Liam. He's kind of my boss.
Ha! Listen, we're still on for training this afternoon, right? Expect to be there till closing.
Sure. Thanks again for the job. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Least I could do after maiming you.
He smiles, then does this strange little arm punch thing, which actually kind of hurts, and then hurries off, Earl flopping behind him.
Shut the front door!
Dree grabs my hand in a vice grip.
How do you know Liam Sandler?
She asks.
Her eyebrows practically touch her hairline. No effing way. Liam Sandler?
Relax, he's not Ryan Gosling. Agnes rolls her eyes at Dree. I'll never understand what you like about him.
Dree ignores her, waits for me to answer. I got a job at his mom's bookstore, basically because he hit me in the head with his guitar case. Embarrassing, but true.
And?
Dree says.
And what?
And everything.
And everything like...
What did he say? What did you say? Can you introduce me?
Have you heard his band?
Oh my God. Orgasmville.
Ew, I say. I mean, he's not bad, but really?
No, that's his band's name, Orgasmville.
Seriously?
Yep. And he is that cute. You have to see him on stage. I've been, like, in love with him for forever. He's never said a word to me. Not one. Until right now.
He didn't technically say anything to you, Agnes informs her.
He spoke in my vicinity, which is more than he's spoken to me in the last 2 years. I'll take it,
Dree says, and tightens her grip on my hand. That hurts, too.
Eee!
He has a girlfriend, Agnes says, and I wonder about her need to piss all over Dree's parade. If Pete McManning, the senior Scar was obsessed with all of freshman year, had ever talked within her vicinity, I would have squeed right along with her, even though I never quite got Scar's interest in him. I can't handle a wispy mustache, even if it's for the hipster cause.
Whatever. Jem can kiss my ass.
He's dating Jem? I ask, and realize just how much I have to catch up on. I know nothing about this school. Forget the honor code. There should be a book that chronicles all this stuff. So, Liam and Jem.
Huh.
If I had thought about it, I would have figured Liam might have a girlfriend, but I wouldn't have paired him with Jem. And not because she's hot. He's the type to have a beautiful girlfriend. But because she's nasty. I had him pegged as better than that.
I know, right? It's the only thing I don't like about him, Dree says.
Dree is, like, totally obsessed with him. Literally obsessed. She even took up the ukulele to get him to notice her. Hashtag fail.
I went through a twee phase. Whatever,
Dree says to me and gives me a hug.
Arrgh! You are now my favorite person in the world.
I smile, pretend not to notice Agnes's dirty look.
SN. How's your day, Ms. Holmes?
Me. Not bad.
Yours?
SN.
Good. Been doing my homework in listicle form because, you know, anything to make it more interesting.
Me. Do you think college will actually be better? For real?
SN. Hope so. But then again, I just read about a guy who lost a ball in a frat hazing incident.
Me. Seriously? What is wrong with people?
SN. Can you imagine wanting to be liked so badly that you'd give up one of your testicles?
Me. I can neither imagine having testicles nor giving one up.
SN. You won't let me use emojis, but an I heart my testes one would be appropriate right about now.
Me. You know what I heart? Nutella and pajama pants and an awesome sauce book. Not necessarily in that order, but together.
SN. Awesome sauce? 2012 texted and wants its word back. BTW. Do you eat the Nutella right out of the jar with a spoon?
Me.
Used to. Now I share a kitchen with the others, so I can't. Wanted to label it, but my dad said that would be rude.
SN. The others?
Me. Stepmom and stepbrother. Do you have others?
SN.
Nope. My parental structure is still intact. Well, at least legally. They barely look at each other these days.
Me.
Why?
SN. It's complicated.
Me. Do you think we'll ever get past it's complicated?
SN. No doubt in my mind, Ms. Holmes.
Chapter 12. Dree's plan is to live vicariously through me, which is a first, since no one has ever wanted to be me. Ever. I've been told to text if Liam says anything interesting. Actually, anything at all. You want to learn via text how to work the cash register? I asked in all seriousness at the end of last period, just before I jumped into my car to go to my first shift at Bookout Below. I wasn't sure how deep Dree's obsession went, but as someone who has had my fair share of crushes, I understand the need for information. Details allow you to pretend that you actually know the person who you obsess over, even though you don't know them at all. You can skip that part. Unless he does something cute while explaining it, then yes, text away, Dree said, fortunately understanding that I was not, in fact, making fun of her. So far, Liam has said nothing worth memorializing. Nothing really interesting at all. The cash register is the same model we had at the Smoothie King, so that shouldn't be a problem. Mostly, my job seems to be to sit behind the counter and stand up when I hear the bell on the front door announce a new customer. Judging by Liam's quick response time, it's clear that this will soon become a reflex. What kind of music does your band play? I ask. I purposely don't say Orgasmville, mostly because I don't think I can do it without blushing. The band's logo is a big vaginal-looking O with a tongue through it. The Rolling Stones meets Georgia O'Keeffe. And of course, the name is trying too hard. I give them no points for subtlety.
I guess rock, sort of. You know Lou Reed?
I nod, though I've only vaguely heard of him. I'm not one of those people who can play the music game, one-upping people via obscure band references.
Like him, but modern, and maybe even better, he says, and smiles so that I know he's just joking.
He's not cocky, like most of the senior boys, who take up too much space when they walk through the halls. All banging lockers and complicated handshakes and running commentary on the girls who are unlucky enough to pass by. Liam, despite swinging Earl, is a bit more contained, the kind of guy who might ask before kissing you. Me. He compared himself to Lou Reed, but in a cute, self-deprecating way. Dree. He's better. Me. Groan. Dree. Fine. Not better. Hotter.
Who are you texting?
Liam asks, and I quickly tuck away my phone. I don't want to embarrass Dree, though, truth be known. I get the feeling he has no idea who she is. My friend Dree. Well, her name is Adriana, but everyone calls her Dree, I say. He shrugs, not interested. She's cool. She was sitting at the lunch table when you came up today. Again. No reaction. I wonder what he'd say if I told him that she knows his birthday, which colleges he's applying to, and his favorite cafeteria foods. That in her head, they have a complex and fulfilling relationship. No matter that it's purely one-sided. I think Dree might even prefer it that way. There are the girls like Jem and Crystal, fearless about guys and orifices and secretions, and there are the girls like Dree and me, who are terrified of rejection and mechanics and unfortunate angles. We realize just how far we still need to go till we can call ourselves women.
I may own my vagina, both in theory and in practice. We are on a first-name basis. Vag and me. Scar's idea, by the way. Not mine. No. Not even a little bit mine. But that doesn't mean I'm not terrified of its appetites. For a moment, I imagine Vag's almost blank resume. 16 years. Closed for business. Hobbies and interests? Cheesy romance novels. Collecting information about Ethan. Ethan Marks. Oddly enough, I have no problem imagining having sex with someone. Say, Ethan Marks. But it's not unlike imagining my Academy Award speech. It's something I can perform perfectly in my head. With both charm and agility, and just the right dose of modesty. But it's a speech that not only will never be delivered, but maybe shouldn't be. Will I one day be able to sleep with a guy and not feel horribly awkward and tortured and not wonder what it all means? I assume so. But right now, the thought of that sort of exposure seems unimaginable. And mostly, if I'm totally honest, nothing short of terrifying.
So you're from Chicago, right?
Liam asks, and I wonder how he knows. We don't have any classes together, since he's a senior. Did his mom tell him? Is he somebody nobody? Yeah, I just moved here, I say.
How do you like it?
He asks. He gathers his hair into a ponytail and then sets it free, again and again. The movement's so precisely the same each time, it's like watching a vine. It's okay, still adjusting, I guess, I say.
Yeah?
Yeah, I say, and wonder if this counts as a scintillating enough conversation to be reported to Dree. I wish I had more interesting things to say to Liam. My fear of saying something stupid often leaves me saying almost nothing at all. He doesn't seem to have much to say himself. You know, still meeting people.
I should introduce you to my girlfriend Jem. She's cool as shit. She's a junior, too.
Oh, Jem, yeah. I think we have a few classes together, I say, and I'm pretty sure I pull off the whole casual, I kinda know who your girlfriend is thing. What I don't say? Your girlfriend sucks.
Don't worry. It'll get easier. It's always hard to be new, he says. Like, you know, my band. They were all together since, like, middle school, and I only joined last year. It was weird at first because of this whole crazy thing, but now they're like my brothers. You should come hear us play.
Totally. Sounds like fun, I say, and I mean it. If only because I'll be able to bring Dree along and solidify our friendship. Me. He says he was new to his band, but now they're his brothers. Dree. Yeah, there was some Oville drama for a while. Sad story. But now they're all good. Not sure how a high school rock band could have a sad story, but I'm sure I'll hear it in all its glorious detail from Dree later. I feel like the kids at Wood Valley have enough money to be immune from truly sad stories. But of course that isn't true. Not everything is for sale. I flash to my mom, bald and literally rotting from within, too weak even to squeeze my hand. And a wave of nausea hits me. It's always been easier to remember her sick. Maybe because that was the most recent iteration, or, more likely, just the most searing. I blink, and thankfully the image is gone.
We've got a gig in a few weeks playing a party. It's not a huge rager or anything, just a chill time. You should come,
Liam says, and I feel the lightness of anticipation. I may actually have something to do on a Saturday night. It would be fun to get out.
It's at Jem's house.
Oh, yeah. So not going to happen. Me. Invited me to a party they're playing in a few weeks. Was going to say we should go, but...
Dree, we have to go.
Me. It's at Jem's.
Dree, so what?
When Liam is around... Jem is a whole different person, especially once she sees him talking to you. Me.
No. Dree, who cares what she says about your genes? This is Oville. You'll love them. Me. If I ever call them Oville, shoot me. Dree, cranky is not the same thing as charming, you know. Me. Of this, I am aware. Dree. Good. It's settled then. Get out your dancing shoes, because we are a-going. Is your music the kind of thing people dance to? I ask Liam, seemingly out of nowhere. Huh? Nothing, I say. Chapter 13. Ethan Marks, is already in the library when I arrive. He's wearing his Batman t-shirt, of course, and is staring out the window, captivated, though I have no idea by what. All I can see is another cloudless sky, emptiness. His right hand massages his jaw as if it's sore from all the talking he refuses to do. I wouldn't mind touching the rough texture of his cheek, feeling the knot where bone meets bone. Did I just say that? Seriously? I take it all back. Sure, he's hot, but he's also kind of a jerk, and it's a waste of my time to have a crush on the one guy every girl in school wants. I don't have a shot. Let's get an A in English and move on. I have stuff to do. Work, school, PSATs. Things are finally starting to feel under control for the first time since we moved. I have a job because money. I have Dree, who is fast becoming a real friend, and SN2, who IIM throughout the day. SN and I mostly talk about stupid stuff, but it's fun having him in my pocket at all times. Hey, I say and fold my legs under me. Casual, relaxed, as if I don't feel the least bit awkward. I'm not a terrible actress, it turns out. I almost believe me. When I look down and see a single brown hair sprouting from my ankle, though, it throws me off balance, and it takes all of my self-control not to yank down my jean cuffs. Chill out. He's not looking at your ankles. Sudden moves make you look nervous. Hey, Jesse. That smile is back, and his face opens up for just a second before it closes again. Ready to do this? Sure, I say, and I wonder if I'll ever be able to move beyond monosyllabic answers with this guy. Scarlett talks more when she's nervous. The adrenaline makes her witty, not slow. But my brain gets overwhelmed, like I've stepped outside myself. Ethan smells like lavender and honey. Fresh, too. The opposite of that body spray all the boys in Chicago use. That horrible dome of chemical scent that would linger long after they walked away. Laundry detergent or cologne, I wonder. Does Ethan wash his shirt every night? Most likely he has his own Gloria to do it for him. Or maybe he has a Batman for every day of the week. And yes, I realize I'm starting to sound like Dree and her obsession with Liam, gathering details to mull over later. Must stop now. I have a limited number of brain cells, and they're better saved for my PSAT prep app. You read any poetry? He asks me, but not really. He asks the window. Ethan is looking at the great beyond again. He's somewhere else. Not like me most of the time, outside myself looking in, but outside himself completely. I recognize the look. There, but not there. I've felt that way before. I'm physically present and accounted for, yet later, when I look back, I realize whole stretches of my day have been stolen. A body without a soul. Not unlike my mother, actually, there somewhere, physically locatable, buried underground. But not there at all. Marked absent in every way that counts. Some, I say. A single syllable, again. Good thing he's not listening. I mean, yeah, I like poetry, and I read The Wasteland a while back, but I didn't really get it, you know? It's like a mashup of all these different voices.
Totally. I googled it, and apparently everything alludes to something else. It's almost like code,
he says, and then looks at me. He's coming to again. Is he on something? Pot? Coke? Molly? Is that the sort of haze we are dealing with? But then he rubs his face, and I realize it's just good old-fashioned fatigue. This boy is tired. Why doesn't he sleep? What happens at night when he closes his eyes?
Stop it, Jesse. I force myself to focus.
Okay, let's start with the very first line. April is the cruelest month. Breeding. What does that even mean? I know it's poetic and kind of cool, especially the breeding part, but why April? Why is it crueler than any other month? I ask.
I don't know, but I kind of hate April,
Ethan says, and then stops. He squints at me, almost angry. He didn't mean to say that. A slip somehow. But about what?
I don't get it.
What does it even mean to hate April? I hated January in Chicago because it was effing cold, but we're not talking about the weather here. He shakes himself out of it.
Do you like to walk? Why don't we do this walking?
Ethan doesn't wait for my agreement, just gathers his books and his laptop, and so I follow him outside. I thought people in L.A. didn't walk, I say once I hear the school door close behind me. I always feel relief at that sound. Another day done and survived. He slips on sunglasses, Ray-Bans, and now he's even harder to read because I can't see his eyes.
I think better when I'm moving. It wakes me up. Want to hear what else I learned from Google?
I nod, which is stupid because he's not looking at me.
Sure. Eliot didn't originally start the poem this way. Ezra Pound told him to cut like 43 lines or something. So the whole April thing was supposed to come later. And back then, presumably he had to literally cut and paste with like scissors and stuff.
I close my eyes for a second and picture it, though I have no idea what T.S. Eliot looked like. But I imagine an old white guy with a monocle, a heavy pair of scissors, and a glue stick. I can't imagine writing without a computer, I confess. When I use paper, it feels too slow or something. My mind is faster than my hands.
Yeah, me too. So tell me something else I don't know about you.
He cocks his head to the side, and this time he is looking at me. I'm grateful for his sunglasses, that extra layer of protection. His gaze is too strong. This surely is one of the many things that keeps the girls coming to his chair, these little moments of connection dished out sparingly, like tiny gifts. Maybe he's intentionally stingy with them, too much and no one would ever leave him alone.
I don't know, I say. Not much to tell. I find that hard to believe.
Okay, there's lots to tell, but not so much you would want to hear. December. That's the cruelest month, I think. Dead mothers' birthdays and Christmas cheer. April, too. The month of endings. And I like your Batman t-shirt and your scary eyes. And I want to know why you don't sleep enough. When I close my eyes at night, I see last moments, impossible goodbyes. But I don't dream anymore. Do you dream? I miss it.
So, what about you? I ask.
Lilacs out of the deadland mixing, memory and desire stirring, dull roots with spring rain. Winter kept us warm, covering. Earth and forgetful snow, feeding. A little life with dried tubers.
You memorized the wasteland? I ask. For real?
Most of it, yeah. I read poetry when I can't sleep. I like to memorize it.
Seriously?
Now I'm totally embarrassed. Stop looking at me like that,
he says. But I'm the one whose face is red.
I've been looking at him in, well, wonder. The guy reads poetry. For fun. Swoon.
I know, it's weird.
He smiles.